Because a caring society will value its weakest members, we must make it a place for the unborn child. Because religious charities provide a safety net of mercy and compassion, our government must never discriminate against them. Because the union of a man and woman deserves an honored place in our society, I support the protection of marriage against activist judges. And I will continue to appoint federal judges who know the difference between personal opinion and the strict interpretation of the law.
That, of course, was President George W. Bush Thursday night last week, giving his much-awaited acceptance speech for the nomination, the Republican nomination, for presidential candidacy in the upcoming November election. That was a foregone conclusion, of course, that he would be there and be speaking. What was not a foregone conclusion was whether or not he would mention those two issues. Now, neither of them, you will note, did he mention by name. He talked about making a place for the unborn. That was a mention of abortion. And he also talked about protecting a marriage between a man and a woman. That was the mention of gay marriage. Before we heard this speech, I think it was last week on the program, I asked whether or not you expected the president to speak on those two issues in particular, and whether you'd be disappointed if he failed to mention them. He did mention them. He did mention them. Did that suffice for you? It's open lines issues, etc., here in the last hour of the program. Our call-in numbers 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I am interested in whether or not you think he nuanced the mention of these two issues, over-nuanced the mention of these two issues, not mentioning abortion by name, but talking about making a place for the unborn child. It's very general. It's very general. Making a place for the unborn child. Now, I'm listening as a pro-life listener. I know what he's talking about. Do you think it was obvious enough for the president speaking to the broadest American audience? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Also talking about, you know, we also mentioned in there that there should not be discrimination against religious charities. That was something I didn't expect him to talk about, but he did throw it in there in this paragraph where he mentioned abortion and gay marriage. What about the nuance on gay marriage? Rather than talking about gay marriage per se, these were his words: because the union of a man and a woman deserves an honored place in society, I support the protection of marriage against activist judges. Then he focused a little more clearly on those activist judges. I will continue to appoint judges who know the difference between personal opinion and the strict interpretation of the law. He did not mention homosexuality or same-sex marriage in those. Everyone knows what he's talking about, of course. He didn't even mention a constitutional amendment, which he has before said he is willing to support in every way he can as president, both now and in a possible second term. Was it too overly nuanced for you? I mean, that's how you have to make these cases. He has to be spare with words, but was he too spare with the ideas? Too not specific enough. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. With only a single mention of abortion, we must protect or make a place for the unborn. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 words. Should he have said more about abortion and more about homosexuality and gay marriage in his address? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727.
From the child in the womb to the mother carrying her, this nation and this president will fight for you. Why? Because each is wonderfully made. And what we do for the so-called least of these, we do for our very Creator.
That was Senator Brown back, Sam Brown back, one of the few pro-life speakers given a primetime appearance at last week's Republican National Convention in New York. Now, very near primetime, and 4 minutes. Now, of course, lots of people got 4 minutes. Only the president gets an hour. Only Zell Miller, keynote speaker for the evening, gets, I think, 25, 30 minutes. But 4 minutes for one of the leading proponents of the pro-life position, Senator Rick Santorum, I'm sorry, Senator Rick Santorum got 4 minutes, not Brownback. Was the pro-life position represented sufficiently? This Republican Party, prior to its convention, ratified a platform that very, very boldly reaffirmed its pro-life position, with, of course, the necessary caveats and exceptions that is that are always in there. And yet, in the convention itself, it was the president mentioned it, and pro-life speakers were allowed to address the issue, and they were given some time, but was it enough for you? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I'd like your general reaction to last week's Republican National Convention and your reaction to the president's address on Thursday night. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's start with Bob, who calls from his car. Bob, welcome.
Don't you think it's important to consider a multitude of issues on whether you support or oppose a particular candidate or party, such as the position on the war, the position on the economy, where the tax decreases have transferred hundreds of billions of dollars from poor and middle-income people to the very wealthy, and the whole questions of health care, especially health care for children, which might have more impact on life in the long run than any position on the life choice issue? Don't you think those issues should be considered in the whole balance and not just the question of the Defense of Marriage Act and the issues on life and choice?
Well, let's deal first with the whole abortion issue. I think I refer to myself as a single issue voter in this sense, and that is tax policy, health care for children really are a moot question if the child isn't alive to enjoy it and grow up and enjoy lower taxes. So the right to life is prerequisite to all other rights or opportunities or prerogatives that any American might enjoy. I think you would agree, Bob.
Well, what if you were talking about the actual statistics on whether or not a particular policy on health care actually was more promotive of life in the long run rather than the question of life or choice? In other words, if thousands or hundreds of thousands of people would die in war or die as a result of lack of adequate medical care or lack of adequate clothing and shelter, wouldn't that be as important as whether or not some would not survive the status of being an embryo?
But, Bob, these people, you got to be an embryo before you can grow up and die in war. They may have died in war or as a result of other policies, and that, of course, is something you want to take into consideration, of course. But I think first and foremost, the people actually have to live in order for those other questions to be even asked. And the fact of the matter is the unborn that we're talking about protecting or making a place for, to use the president's parlance, are the unborn that are not going to be given a chance to even enter society in the first place. The basic question for you then, Bob, before I let you go, doesn't the unborn child have rights?
Well, without going into the question of whether or not the unborn child has rights, what if you have more people die in Rwanda as a result of a certain governmental policy, then persons, if you want to call them persons, are aborted by the policy on abortion.
Well, no, I would call them persons, Bob, but hold on a second. You answer my question, and I'll be happy to answer your question. Does the unborn child have any rights that we need to consider as a nation and as voters? Answer my question. I'll be happy to answer yours.
Well, I think you've got a very, very difficult question there on the question of life, because one of the things that I think needs to be considered in the balance is what is going to be done about the unborn. Take, for example, the question of stem cell research. And there's many, many frozen embryos that right now don't have a life. What is going to be done about those embryos? Are they going to be provided? Is there a campaign?
Well, now you have asked a second question, which I would be happy to answer as long as you answer my first question. Does the unborn child have a right to live? Just that one right. Let's not even talk about any others. A right to live.
I think everyone has a right to live. Everyone.
Including the unborn child.
And including all the people that might be killed in Iraq, all the people that might die as a result of adequate health care, all the people that would suffer malnutrition as a result of failed economic policies, or genocide as in Rwanda or someplace else in the
world.
And
that group would include the unborn child. Yes, sir?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Bob, thank you very much. Look, we can talk about people in Rwanda. Those are all important, very important things to talk about. They are. I want you to think about it in these terms. First of all, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. This will be the third time. If a person doesn't actually get born, if their birth is prevented by abortion, then none of those questions are relevant for that person. You actually have to live before you can go on to talk about, well, they had to go fight in war or something like that. Let's also, he talked about balancing things out or putting things in the balance. 4,000 a day. 4,000 a day. That's how many abortions are performed in this country alone. That's not counting how many abortions are performed in Western Europe or any place else. China, other places. 4,000 a day in this country alone. Now, in the last 30 years, the numbers become astronomical. They become, we're talking about tens of millions of unborn children aborted in the last 30 years since the decriminalization of abortion. Now, if you just want to talk balance, just today we passed 1,000 U.S. and coalition forces, I think just U.S. casualties, deaths in Iraq. Not to diminish it in any way, but do you balance that with 40 million and 4,000 a day? You know, you're going to be worried, and we should be both worried and mournful over 1,000 casualties. But there are 4,000 a day here within the 50 states of the United States due to abortion. Now, I don't want to depart from sound logic or from objective arguments here, but the staggering numbers alone, it's hard for me to find something to balance with 4,000 a day. Even if 1,000 a day in the United States were dying from inadequate health care, which doesn't happen, I don't know how many do die from inadequate health care, but certainly is not nowhere near 1,000, it would never measure up or balance with 4,000 a day in abortion clinics and hospitals and doctors' offices all over the United States. You know, back in the 19th century, we were struggling with another great moral dilemma that had to do with personhood and the human person. It was slavery. For many people during that time, that was their single issue. Would you have been a single issue voter back then? I would have. Yes. Why? Because it's a fundamental question that comes before all other questions like taxation and foreign policy and health care and all those kind of things. It's a fundamental question. First, let's see that people get a chance to live and be regarded from the time of conception as full members of the human race, deserving our protection and our help. And then we can talk about the other things. So in answer to Bob's first question, yes, I think that while other things are always, all other things being equal, I do worry about taxes and foreign policy and things like that when it comes to the choosing of a presidential candidate. But all other things are not equal. All other things are not equal. There is a world of difference between someone, regardless of their view of gun control, tax policy, all those things pale by comparison to whether or not they will advocate for 4,000 a day being killed or whether they will try in some way to stop it. And I guess that's what makes me the single issue voter. If I was in the 19th century, I would pray that would have been my position on slavery. We could have talked about this and that in those days and all of the other political issues, but the one that would press upon, I think, the moral voter, I'm not just talking about Christians, but the moral voter is the one that presses hard upon the conscience. And the only other question I can remember that he asked was about the in vitro fertilization and the frozen embryos. He says they don't have a life. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. That's the whole point. They do. The question is, will they be allowed to continue to live? That's the only question. Because Bob is willing to concede that they are human beings deserving protections and that they have rights to live. The question is, will we protect that right? And will we vote for people who will protect that right? Pat is calling from his car. Pat, welcome.
Yes, I was just wondering, forever I've been pro-life, and I've always pushed that issue, but how do they come up with the 4,000 a day number? And it's always been 4,000 a day. Shouldn't it have been going up or down? Or I'm sure that's just an average, but it's always been the average, and I've never heard it higher or lower. And also, one thing that always confused me about how weird abortion is, a lady can get herself pregnant, and after 8 months say, oh, I don't want this baby, and go and throw it in a dumpster and get caught and get in trouble for it. But if she went to the abortionist, she wouldn't get in trouble. It never made sense.
That doesn't make any sense to me either, Pat. Okay, the 4,000 figure, I did a little research on this once, and I'm always skeptical about things that are just tossed out as, you know, it's a statistic that everyone cites and no one can cite where it came from. If you want to look, you got to go to the Census Bureau and you have to look at the statistics of infant mortality. Oh, if you want, my email address, twilken, twilken at kfuo.org. I would be happy to send anyone who's interested a little piece that I wrote some time back called The Real Infant Mortality Rate in the U.S. You know what? It is not what the Census Bureau reports because they don't count abortions. They report, I think in the last year that I looked at, I think it was 2001, somewhere in the neighborhood of 4,200 abortions in that were reported. Those are the ones that are actually reported to the Census Bureau. Now, you've got to count on the fact that women aren't going to be reporting abortions they didn't have. It's far more likely that women who have abortions will not report one that they did have. So I think we're safe talking about 4,000 a day. We're probably underestimating it. I hate to say that, but it's true. If you count in abortion into the figure of the of infant mortality in the U.S., do you know what infant mortality is? The rate at per 1,000, how many babies die? Do you know what it is? For every 100 babies that are born, how many die? It's 21%. The U.S. has a 21% infant mortality rate if you count abortion. That is higher than any third world country. We just do it in clinics. You know, in India, they just leave the little girl along the side of the road and let them die of exposure. Or the child dies in childbirth, or the child dies of disease, or something along those lines. If you count abortion, we've got a 21% infant mortality rate. And you say, that can't be. That number's too high. I checked it every way but sideways, not believing my eyes, but it's true. Another little-known fact. Andy's calling from Kirkwood. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how you doing? One of the things that I noticed during the protests leading up to the Republican convention was that the pro-abortion group marched from the Brooklyn Bridge to the 9/11 Ground Zero site and had a rally there. And I thought, how utterly ironic. Here they were at a site where fewer than 3,000 people died on one horrible, horrible day. And compared that then to the fact that those towers, if we take abortion seriously, are coming down every single day and 4,000 are dying. And that's my comment.
Thank you very much, Andy. Yeah, 2.5 towers. The North Tower, South Tower, and you got to add in another tower. And the Pentagon and a plane going down in Pennsylvania, and it happens every single day. And it's not people who have grown up and gotten careers and were struck down tragically in midlife, pursuing their families and in the pursuit of happiness. It is people who never had a chance to grow up and pursue anything. Not happiness, not even life. That's why, and I'll be honest with you folks, 10 years ago, I would not have been a single issue voter. 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been. Because I would have thought that these other issues are as important or could be assembled in some way together to balance out the concern for life when I cast my ballot. Having looked at this square in the face and seen not only the raw numbers, but the stark reality of this thing, I can't balance it out anymore. Not in good conscience. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Willis is calling from... You know what? I wouldn't have cared if the president even didn't mention gay marriage. He could have left that out if he would have spent the paragraph that he of the hole there talking about abortion. Willis is calling from Perryville. Hi, Willis.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd. Well, I thought the Republican convention was simply outstanding. The second night, Governor Schwarzenegger had an outstanding speech. He's very dynamic, almost like President Reagan. And his three-point message was, why I'm an American, why I'm a Republican, and why I support the re-election of President Bush. He really is a dynamic speaker. And the second night, Zell Miller had such an outstandingly beautiful message of where Kerry and Kennedy are really not doing the people's will. I thought he had a super good message. I really would give the Republican convention an A-plus for their achievements. Don't you think so, too?
Two things, Willis. Were you disappointed at the few pro-life speakers and the few statements made with regard to the life issue?
Well, I'm very anti-abortion, too, but the Republican platform, at least they're pro-life, they're anti-abortion. And the message that those guys gave was pretty conservative, you know. So I know that we're going to do right if we elect the Republicans. And Kerry, all he can do is criticize the presidency. He doesn't have anything positive to offer at all. And the polls that you're now, 53% are for Bush and 42% for Kerry. Of course, the election is still a little ways away, but I hope and pray that there'll be a big landslide in Bush's favor.
Willis, thank you very much for the call. What about the rest of you? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. This break is a great time to call. It's coming up here in just a moment. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Anything you'd like to talk about during this live hour of Open Lines? We are coming to you live this Tuesday. It's the 7th of September already, 1 week into September. We're talking about last week's Republican National Convention in New York and the president's speech. When we come back, your reaction to the Republican National Convention, to the president's speech, to the mention, and he did mention it, you could at least say he mentioned them, abortion and gay marriage. Did it suffice for you? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. And if we have time, I'd also like to ask you about Alan Keyes. He weighed in on homosexuality and has gotten himself in hot water. We'll be right back and talk about that.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I guess you've probably seen the healing services on television, but do these faith healers have a biblical understanding of faith and healing? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for September is titled Order Restored, A Biblical Interpretation of Health, Medicine, and Healing. It's published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Order Restored costs $20.99, plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about Order Restored on our website, issuesetc.org. Just click the What's New section. How important are faith, attitude, and community in healing and wellness? Find out with Order Restored, our Issues, Etc. book of the month for September. 1-800-325-3040. Or look it up on issuesetc.org.
Evolutionists, do they go to hell?
Answers with Ken Ham
author of the best-selling book, The Lie Evolution. Well, Ken, you sound pretty provocative today. You're not telling us that all of those who believe in evolution will go to hell, are you?
Well, no, I'm certainly not saying that at all. You see, there are many Christians who believe in evolution, and if they're truly born-again Christians, then believing in evolution won't keep them out of heaven. Remember, the Bible says that if Christ be not raised from the dead, our faith is in vain. It doesn't say if you believe in evolution, our faith is in vain. But I do want to make a very important point nonetheless. For born-again Christians who believe in evolution and millions of years of history, although this doesn't affect their salvation, it does affect what their children or others they influence believe about the Bible. You see, what's happened over the years is that when one generation compromises God's word by accepting man's fallible ideas, like evolution and millions of years, and then reinterpreting parts of the Bible, then the next generation tend to reinterpret other parts of the Bible as well, and over time it loses its authority. Eventually, biblical authority becomes so undermined that people begin to drift away from the Bible. I truly believe this is ultimately why the culture is losing the Christian influence it once had.
One of the most asked questions we receive is, could there be life in outer space? Ken Ham provides the answer in his free booklet, available on our website, answersradio.com.
This is Dr. John Tape with the Media Minute. Early sexual intercourse among adolescents represents a major public health problem. That is the word from the American Academy of Pediatrics. Their report goes on to say, quote, although early sexual activity may be caused by a variety of factors, the media are believed to play a significant role. In film, television, and music, sexual messages are becoming more explicit, and these messages contain unrealistic, inaccurate, and misleading information that young people accept as fact, end quote. It's important to remind our teens that Christ died on the cross to save them from immorality and its harmful consequences. This Media Minute is brought to you by the Christian Media Literacy Institute. Please visit our website at cmli.org.
Here's a salute to our new web affiliate, Beautiful Savior Lutheran Church in Olathe, Kansas, for posting KFUO web audio. See an example of how your church's website can benefit from worldwide KFUO on our homepage at kfuo.org. KFUO web audio is designed to provide your visitors daily changing audio. Once you post the links, we update the audio daily. These programs serve your visitors by playing through your website on demand at no cost to your ministry.
Because a caring society will value its weakest members, we must make it a place for the unborn child. Because religious charities provide a safety net of mercy and compassion, our government must never discriminate against them. Because the union of a man and woman deserves an honored place in our society, I support the protection of marriage against activist judges. And I will continue to appoint federal judges who know the difference between personal opinion and the strict interpretation of the law.
Those are the only references to abortion and homosexuality in the president's acceptance speech Thursday night at the Republican National Convention. He talked about a lot of things. He talked about everything, plus the kitchen sink, plus the bathroom sink, plus whatever else he had in the cabinet. He talked about a lot of things. He found time to speak in Spanish. He found time to mention his website. He told stories. He even at the end, which I actually thought was one of the more interesting times in the president's speech, and I wonder if you agree, he even talked about himself in very personal terms. So he had a lot of time and a lot of space. Those are the two mentions that he got in, among all the other things. Was it sufficient for you if you were expecting the president to mention both abortion and gay marriage? Or did you care whether or not he mentioned them at all? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I mean, what? He's got to be able to do everything in this speech because this, if John Kerry gives an acceptance speech, And he is giving the acceptance speech as the candidate, as a person who needs to talk about not only what he may have done, but also talk about what he hopes to do. When the president is running for president again, he gives this speech as president. He is expected to address the nation, not just his voters, not just his base, but the entire nation. And he's expected to give an account of himself as president for the last 4 years. Even if he weren't running for president, he would be expected to do that, right? So maybe it's not any wonder that we get 9 words on abortion and a few more on gay marriage by way of talking about activist judges. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What were your thoughts as you listened to the president, your overall reaction to the Republican National Convention and then to the president's address? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, of course, when the president mentioned gay marriage there in his address, there was someone looking on who has also been in the news of late for his discussion of gay marriage, and that was his vice president, Dick Cheney. If you will remember, the vice president was quoted in an interview, I believe this was with the Denver Post, and then he was quoted elsewhere, as talking about, he was asked about his lesbian daughter. One of his daughters is a lesbian. And, of course, he loves his daughter, and he talked about how we live in a free country. In fact, he said what he has been saying for the last 4 years on the issue of his daughter and on the issue in particular of same-sex unions and civil unions. We live in a free society. Freedom means freedom for everybody. That means people should be free to enter into any kind of relationship they want to. It's no one else's business what kind of relationship you enter into. And then, of course, if he's consistent, the vice president has also, every time he's talked about that, mentioned that he thinks this is a state's issue, the whole issue of gay marriage. The state should be allowed to decide that. Now, more recently, in the Denver Post, an interview that he gave there on the issue of gay marriage and the apparent discrepancy between the vice president and the president on this issue, Vice President Dick Cheney said, obviously, the president is going to have to make a decision in terms of what the administration policy is on this particular provision, and I will support whatever decision he makes. Now, he wants it to be a state's decision. He personally believes that freedom means freedom for everyone, and that means you should be able to enter into any kind of relationship you want to, including, and I don't think I'm reading too much into it, including gay marriage, but he will support whatever the president decides to do. Alan Keyes weighed in not only on this issue, but on the issue of homosexuality in the same week as the president was accepting the nomination of his party. The story, this is from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch at the time, Keyes' tongue worries GOP. Story from New York, when the Illinois Republican Party reached out of state to widely known conservative activist Alan Keyes last month and asked him to run for the Illinois open U.S. Senate seat, they were looking for a candidate who could attract national attention. Last week, he got it. Keyes joined the state delegation to the Republican National Convention in New York and on Monday gave a radio interview in which he defined homosexuals as, quote, selfish hedonists because their unions could not result in children. When the interviewer asked whether that meant that Republican Vice President Dick Cheney's lesbian daughter, Mary Cheney, was also a selfish hedonist, Keyes answered, quote, of course she is. That goes by definition. Now, of course, there was a lot of fallout. The White House did, at least through spokespeople, respond. And many in the Republican Party nationally and in the Illinois Republican Party responded as well. Alan Keyes appears to have stirred up a hornet's nest by simply stating his position on homosexuality. He was asked with reference also to the vice president's daughter. Laying aside the fact that this is a Senate candidate, laying aside the fact that this is a charged political race in Illinois, that it also has national ramifications, laying aside all the politics of this, is this the way that a Christian, and Alan Keyes is a Roman Catholic, and he makes these statements that he makes from not only a personal but a strong conviction based upon what he believes as a Christian. Is this the way that Christians ought to address the issue in the public square? He knew where he was. He was actually being interviewed by I believe it was a pro-gay radio show. So he knew where he was. He knew to whom he was talking. He also was aware of what the audience might have been as well. Is this the way that the Christian in the public square makes the case about homosexuality? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, etc. Of course, with these questions laid on the table, it's also anything you want to talk about. We have about 15 minutes. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Chet is on the line. He calls from East St. Louis. Chet, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, Pastor Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good, good. Well, you know, I'd like to say if I were inclined to be a one-issue voter from the part of the president's speech that you just played, I wouldn't be convinced that he was 100% supportive of the pro-life issue. I think that was a bit of an ambiguous statement. He said, you know, we're going to make a place for the unborn. You know, that's not a definite statement. That can be interpreted a lot of different ways. That could be making a place for unborn children who are wanted. I mean, if he came out and emphatically addressed the issue and expressed it in the terms as abortion, not so ambiguously, then I would be a lot more persuaded. I hear a lot of people calling in saying that he is the pro-life candidate, but I haven't heard him made a definite statement to that effect. You know, I think he was a little bit more direct when he talked on the issue of gay marriage, but still, it wasn't a very emphatic statement.
Well, and even then, Chet, I would point out that while it was a more emphatic statement, it was framed in terms of activist judges and not in terms of the rightness or wrongness
of
same-sex marriage, or in terms of whether or not even in terms of whether or not it's a social good or a social ill to permit same-sex marriage. It was simply, you know, these judges want to do it. They're overstepping their bounds. I'm going to stand against them. And we need to give the marriage between a man and a woman an honored place. But the emphasis was put on the activist judiciary. You're right.
Yes, and that's the point I'd like to make. You know, and I hear a lot of people that support President Bush on that, but still I don't think he's being clear on the issue. And I think that's political chicanery, you know, as far as I'm concerned. The one caller said something about the speech that Arnold Schwarzenegger gave. Well, I wouldn't be too impressed by that. The man's been an actor for the past 30 years, and he has all these professional speech writers, and of course he can give a pretty dramatic speech.
Chet, thank you for the call. You know, the fact of the matter is actors make good politicians. They do. That doesn't mean they make good lawmakers. That doesn't mean they govern well. They make great politicians. They have it down better than a lot of politicians do. And we've discovered very recently the politicians make good actors. Who is the guy who made a career for himself on Law and Order after he came out of acting, went into politics, came out of politics, went back into, yeah, Senator Thompson? It's a, you know, it's kind of interchangeable, especially in our modern era. Yeah, the president's comments were apolemical. They argued for something but not against anything. You might even call them politically correct, although it's hard to say that calling the unborn child, saying unborn child, is politically correct. That is a politically incorrect statement in modern America. But it was still, I'm going to tell you what I'm for, but I'm not necessarily going to tell you. I'm going to only allow you to infer what I'm against. Now, let's just say the whole pro-life community followed his lead. We're going to tell you what we're for, but we're going to allow you simply to infer what we're against. We'll tell you what we're for, and you can kind of gestalt. You can kind of figure out what we're against. Now, it was safe for the president to do this because the people like me who are waiting to hear him mention these things were going to read between the lines. He could have even probably said, I want to see the unborn blank protected, and pro-lifers would have read between the lines. Were you satisfied? 505-7850, or is this the most that we can hope for? This is the best we can hope for. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Jane's up next, calling from her car. Hi, Jane. Jane, welcome. Jane is fading fast on her car phone. Jane, give us a call back, and we'll have a conversation. Paul is calling from St. Charles. Paul, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Couple points. You had a guest on, I think, last week, or a caller, I guess, during the discussion hour, and it was representing the Constitution Party and was saying that she wouldn't support President Bush because of his lack of absolute zeal on issues of abortion or for other reasons. And I just thought, in light of what that caller Bob had said earlier, I think we get far too idealistic at times and in trying to make a decision on issues of who to select, for example, for president. And some of those issues he raised, though, I thought that caller Bob was really red herrings, because you certainly tried to pin him down on the issue of abortion, and they kind of squeezed it out of him eventually to make the point. But, you know, it's interesting that that he would bring up issues like health care in this country, and those types of things are always raised up. Some of the fiscal issues are what you're going to be here bandied about for a while, and you certainly will for the next 60 days. But, you know, something like I've heard Bill O'Reilly say, but which is interesting, is when you're talking about the job issue, you know, the current rate of unemployment is commensurate to what it was approximately the same in 96 when Bill Clinton was running for re-election. And so I think these, again, are just red herring issues that, you know, the other side has to find something to attack on. And the issue of health care, what I wanted to say about that was, you know, we can argue that we have so many in this country who do not have health care, but what that always ends up running into is some kind of quasi-socialist state that they want. And capitalism, for all its faults, will always be superior to that because, for example, my mother recently, without health insurance, had colon cancer. Now, without insurance, when in a matter of a few days of going to the hospital, she had received surgery and is now cancer-free and still currently being treated and going through that. Now, if that had happened, say, in Canada, for example, she'd probably still be on a waiting list waiting for a surgery to be scheduled. And by the time that may roll around, she would probably or could potentially die from it. And again, even if that time would come, the quality of care would never be equal to what it is in this country under a capitalist system.
Paul, thank you very much. Look, you know, you're right. The red herrings that are raised by those who either want to ignore the question or step around the question or forestall the question or simply avoid it altogether, the red herrings are many. They're manifold. And you have your hands full just trying to identify them as red herrings. And you're right to have done that, Paul. It comes down to this basic question. We've dealt with it so many times on issues, et cetera. It was first hatched, I think, probably formally on this program by Scott Klusendorf. The question everyone, not only the question everyone must answer, the question everyone does answer, whether they think they're answering it or not. Who is the unborn? Who is the unborn? You may not have ever been asked that question or given a formal answer for it, but you have answered the question. You've answered the question by the way you vote. You've answered the question by the way you think about abortion. If you've never thought about abortion before, you've answered the question. Now, you say, well, I think it's a human being, but not worth one worth thinking about or putting any effort forth. Or maybe you don't think it's a human being at all. You don't think the unborn is a person. You've answered the question. What was it, Rush? Not Limbaugh, but the first Rush, the rock group from the late 80s. If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. That's what Lee Getty, I think, was the lead singer of that group. It's amazing the things rolling around in the back of your head suddenly surface in the middle of conversation. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Open lines for the next 10 minutes of Issues, Etc. Beth, waiting in Cape Girardeau, so patient. Beth, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. I actually called with regard to a question you posed when you were talking about the candidate keys.
Yes.
In Illinois, about is this the way Christian politicians should pose their views or something along that
line. Well, laying politics aside, is this the way a Christian who has this conviction, and I agree with his convictions,
mm-hmm.
I can't find a way around his convictions, but is this the way to present it the way he presented it?
Well, I think this is a wonderful question because, you know, it really has nothing to do whether he's a Christian politician or a Christian parking person.
Exactly.
It has everything to do with the proper understanding and distinction between law and gospel. It's so easy for us to point out the law, whether someone else is not keeping it or the fact that we obviously cannot keep it. But the gospel is never there to point those individuals to where they need to be. It's only half of the whole story.
Well, and even then, if you want to analyze Key's statement in terms of law and gospel, it would have been a sounder proclamation of the law had he said, yes, homosexuals are selfish hedonists, and so am I, Alan Key.
Right.
Or I would put it in terms of, so am I, I'm Todd Wilkin. I am also a selfish hedonist, not in the way that homosexuals practice their selfish hedonism, but as a fallen creature, a descendant of Adam, I inherited the selfish hedonism that we call sin, and it manifests itself in my life, much to my chagrin, in many ways, not including homosexuality, but in many ways equally as wicked and as selfish and as hedonistic as the homosexual. I don't think there are a lot of Christians who would actually even say that, because they tend to think of homosexuality as one of those like turbocharged sins,
right,
that is bigger and more powerful than their own sins. But I think if Alan Keyes were honest, and I think he's probably honest enough to come to that conclusion, and having given a chance to think about it a little more, he might have been willing to make a statement like that.
Well, if I ever observed a politician share that, I would have to let them know that their calling is higher than that of a politician if they have that correct understanding. Because I can't imagine hearing that. I truly can't.
Beth, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the story that has come out on Keyes, I have yet to hear any audio from here, very brief quotes, and my producer rightly pointed out before the program began today, since this was something that was both said and broadcast and recorded on a pro-gay radio program, you know, we do not know whether Keyes might have actually said that, and only the juiciest bits made it out to the media. Yes, it's satellite radio network, isn't it? Is that correct? And he may well have followed up with the prospect of the gospel. He may well have said, This is the kind of selfish hedonism, including my own, for which Jesus Christ spent his life at the cross. Now that would be a distinctly Christian message. You see, a Muslim, Alan Keyes could just as well be a Muslim and call homosexuality selfish hedonism. He could be a Mormon and call homosexuality selfish hedonism. He could be an agnostic and call it selfish hedonism. He could be a Jehovah Witness and call it selfish hedonism. He could be a Hindu and call it selfish hedonism. He could be a Buddhist and call it selfish hedonism. He could be a Sikh, a Zoroastrian. The list goes on. What would make it a distinctly Christian witness? You know, I think he'd probably get an email saying, thank you, Dr. Keyes, for being such a clear Christian witness in the public square. But he doesn't deserve it if he didn't actually witness to what it is that Christians, and distinctly what Christians believe, and that is, Jesus died for us selfish hedonists. He spent his life at the cross for us selfish hedonists, yes, including homosexuals, yes, including me. When a Christian addresses any of these questions in the public square, it does not suffice to say, look, I'm only speaking as a prospective senator. It doesn't suffice. We do not like it when John Kerry says, look, there's Roman Catholic Kerry and then there's politician Kerry. People see right through it. Now, in his case, he uses it to draw a clear line between what Roman Catholics believe and teach, or he supposedly says he believes in and teaches, and what he practices and says as a lawmaker. Alan Keyes, there's consistency between those two things. But when the Christian steps into the public square, he must remember, whether he be a politician or a plumber or a pipe fitter or whatever he may be, that his calling is higher and that he carries with him not just the moral indignation of someone who finds homosexuality morally repugnant, he carries with him the one who has kept the law in the place of all sinners, Jesus Christ. Now, can you make the case in the public square as a Christian, or a non-Christian for that matter, against homosexuality based entirely upon natural law? Yes. In fact, Christians would do well to equip themselves. That's why we do it on this program. That's why we have programs where we talk about, where we approach the issue, like we've done them with Greg Kokel on a number of, Greg Kokel is a fine Christian man who believes on the basis of Scripture that homosexuality is wrong. When we talk to him, we keep the emphasis upon making the case in the public square on the basis of generally natural law. We might not call it that, but that's what we're doing. Based upon reason and prudence, is homosexuality a good idea apart from moral considerations? Is it natural? Apart from moral considerations, is it natural? Is it healthful? Is it harmful? Does it square with the consensus of human history and civilization? Does same-sex marriage form the basis for a sound society? See, all those kind of arguments can and should be made by the Christian as well. Especially given who his audience was, and he had to know who his audience was. He had a prime opportunity as a Christian. He had a prime opportunity as a Christian to speak a clear word beyond just natural law arguments. I hope that he made those, and that they went unreported. But he had a prime opportunity to do exactly what Beth was talking about. Speak not only the law, but speak the law in a clear, not just a ham-fisted way, but in a clear way that includes all sinners, including himself. And to follow with the prospect of the gospel. A pleading for repentance and holding out before the eyes of those who would repent the clear word of forgiveness in Jesus Christ. Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., we'll continue our series on Christianity and civil law with international human rights attorney and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. Tomorrow on the program, the law and human cloning. There are no laws written to cover this kind of stuff yet. Well, there are some, a few. Most of them are written rather poorly. We'll talk about those clone and kill bills that masquerade themselves as bans on human cloning. And we'll talk with Dr. Montgomery tomorrow about what makes for a good cloning law. That's tomorrow on Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.